Dave Bartuth joining us from College Football Matrix. We wanted to get his take on the upcoming season and why things are the way they are. Dave, thanks for the time. Always good to catch up. And we were just talking about how excited we are about the college football season. I presume you are as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is going to be a season that we're going to remember for a long time. I can't remember, at least in the last 10, 15 years, where you see so many teams from a talent standpoint and from the standpoint of holes and question marks where each division, each conference, at least in the Power Five, I think there's going to be a lot of really tight races that are going to go way into November, and it's going to be, I think it's just going to be an epic year.
You know, we saw some weird things happen. We always do early in the season, but there are several big games. The first weekend, certainly 2 weeks from now, you have a big Michigan game, obviously South Carolina. The games on Saturday are good, not nearly as good as they'll be next year when it's probably the most epic day in college football history, Alabama and USC among the games. But as you look at the first weekend, of course, Notre Dame, Texas is also a pretty salty matchup. Do you see any likelihood for what I would call a major upset?
A major upset. Well, you know, there's a couple of them I have circled that I think are big games where I think there's a lot of potential for a team to really rise up and surprise some people. One of them is Michigan at Utah. You know, Michigan with Harbaugh coming in, inside my numbers when he was at Stanford, one of the top coach effect guys in college football. What he did for Stanford was more impressive than even what's happened at Oregon in the last few years. And now at Michigan, an entirely new talent level. I believe their talent is better than Utah. Certainly with a new coaching staff, there is just going to be some ambiguity there. But when it comes right down to it, I look at Harbaugh and his coach's effect with the talent. I think the upset is definitely a possibility at Utah. And that's a huge game for the psyche, I believe, of both teams, because Utah has aspirations to try to win the second toughest division in college football, and Michigan wants to get things going early with Harbaugh.
Moving closer, you have three really interesting SEC games. You have Texas A&M and Arizona State in Houston, Alabama, Wisconsin, obviously in Dallas. In the first game, Louisville and Auburn. Of those three games, what's the best likelihood of a surprise?
You know, so I got to go with Arizona State, Texas A&M. Because with Louisville and Auburn, I believe the Auburn talent level, the gap between Auburn and Louisville is too great, especially early in the year. You look at the returning starts, the returning starters, the overall talent stratification of Auburn, it's significantly higher than Louisville. Yeah, Louisville has Petrino, who is, from a coaching standpoint, is an absolute freak. But I just don't believe early on Auburn's going to be losing that football game. You go over to Alabama, Wisconsin. Wisconsin's had some turnover. They brought in Paul Chryst, which I don't really like the hire. The last 3 years of Chryst at Pitt, he was poor in terms of his coach effect. He brought their recruiting down. I don't think he brings anything positive to Wisconsin. I think the talent in a low-scoring game wins out for Alabama. Now, you look at Arizona State and Texas A&M. Now, here's two programs, both of them top 25 recruiters, A&M a top 15 recruiter. I like A&M to win this game, but Arizona State under Graham in the last 3 years, their recruiting has improved, their talent's up. He has won a lot of games that I felt he wasn't supposed to in terms of the talent level. So of those three games, I would take Arizona State for the upset, but I still have A&M winning that football game.
You always hear it's probably the most overused cliche in the world, Dave. Team advances, improves, whatever, from week one to week two. But what are you looking for, particularly when you see the marquee games? The coaches all say, and I'm sure they've told you the same thing, that it really helps fire the teams up. Is there that much difference after the first week?
You know something, it may depend on the team, Paul, because, you know, for some teams they need an inner motivation. If you're talking about elite teams, if you're talking about teams that are trying to win a national title game or at least get in the playoffs, all I'm looking for is at least one half of the, whether it's offense or the defense, somebody has to be elite, okay? Because in the last 12 years, at the end of the season, the winner of the national title game has been top three in either offensive scoring efficiency, or defensive scoring efficiency. Sometimes it's both. You get an amazing team, and they're number one, number two in both sides of it. So what I'm looking for in September, and I'll be charting this on the site as we go along each week, is who's in the top five of offensive and defensive scoring efficiency. If you're out there watching your team, you need to see them doing something great on one side of the ball or the other if you're trying to get into the playoffs and win a national title.
And let me go to the playoffs. We bloviate nonstop in the off season, but you'll start watching a lot. Obviously, we haven't mentioned Ohio State as well. They are the clear-cut favorite. As we sit here today with 2 weeks to go, how do you chart the playoff contenders?
I think you're right. I think it's Ohio State and, like, whatever three teams you want to put in there, okay? Because Ohio State, they have the second-ranked ease of schedule in college football this year. They have the fifth most returning starts in college football. I think anybody who doesn't have them in the playoffs right now is trolling for clicks. Now, when you go the other direction, in the SEC, I like Auburn because they're hosting Alabama. I think that's going to be the difference maker for them. And the SEC champ, in my opinion, should be in the playoffs. Their conference schedule is far and away the toughest in college football. I like the SEC champ getting in there, and I'm taking Auburn in that one. Now, when you look at everybody else, there's just huge holes. Big dark horse, Notre Dame, because they only have 12 games. They don't have to play that 13th one. And they have a schedule that's very conducive, for that happening for them. The rest of them, I think the Big 12 is going to miss the playoffs again this year with a three-way tie at the top of the heap. And everybody else that's out there that people are talking about has some kind of hole that really makes me question if they can actually get to the playoffs, let alone win the national title.
You just sent off a panic attack in Baylor and Waco and Fort Worth. Please explain your Big 12 analysis.
Well, when you look at the balance in the Big 12, number one, there's no elite teams. There's not in my opinion, inside the numbers, there is not a national championship team in the Big 12 this year. When you look back at the last 15 national title winners, the metrics they have match nobody in the Big 12 this year. So that's one strike against them right there. Then you look at the parity. Now, TCU, everybody's on board with TCU, and I don't mind saying right now, I don't have them in the playoffs. And here's one of the big reasons why. They have a ton of history going against them. Last year, they were a very lucky team. And luck is turnover margin. They led the country last year, plus 21 in turnover margin. In the last 7 years, every single team in Power 5 football to be plus 17 or better in turnover margin. The very next year, turnover margin was down, and so was their win total. I like TCU underperforming at 10-2, Baylor getting to 10-2, and watch Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. One of those two teams is going to go 10-2 as well and absolutely obliterate the one true champion motto for the Big 12.
Let me finish on the SEC. You mentioned Auburn. That's understandable. But on the east side, we're not talking so much playoffs, but we're all talking about getting to the SEC championship game. Look at the east for us. What do you see?
Well, to me, it's Georgia at Tennessee. That's really what it comes down to. Florida has the numbers. They have the talent to be a 10-win team, in my opinion. But with the new coach and a very, very tough schedule, I think 8-4 is much more realistic for them in that third, fourth spot. South Carolina, I don't think the spear is as sharp anymore. Since Spurrier announced that he's going to retire, I feel that you can't have your edge as an entire football program waiting for somebody to retire. Whether it's true or not, whether he likes it or not, 1, 2, 3 years from now, it's hard to keep that edge, especially from a coaching staff, if you know, hey, when he goes, I'm gone as well. Missouri, wow. What a great story for the last 2 years, back-to-back. I can't see them doing it a third time, but it's hard to underestimate Pinkel. That's why it's Georgia-Tennessee. But I'm taking Tennessee because they have Georgia at home. Georgia, the only team this century to be a top-10 recruiter and a top-10 team for NFL draft picks to not win a national championship game. So it's hard to bet on anybody out of the East making it to the playoffs and winning it all, even though Georgia, in my opinion, is the only team that actually has the talent level to do that.
Yeah, what an incredible stat, Dave. Let me flip back over to the West 1 second. You mentioned Alabama, Auburn. I understand that. But if Auburn wins, quickly, if you don't mind, go through the rest of the contenders, starting with Alabama.
Oh, man, we could spend hours figuring out who's going to come first and last. Alabama, to me, is the team that has the greatest potential. You're talking about the number one recruiter in college football after attrition over the last 5 years. So they have national championship potential, but they lost their top three wide receivers, number one quarterback, number one running back, most of their offensive line in a conference that is returning 227 more starts on defense than offense. I think that is going to be difficult. It's the toughest schedule for Saban since he got there. I have them in a tie for second behind Auburn. Now, when you go down the list, it's really, you know, to me, LSU is right there second, third with Alabama. I like their schedule. They have the most favorable schedule in the West, and I think that's good for one game for them. I like them as a dark horse to win the division. I don't have them picked there, but I think they have the best opportunity to do that. And then from, you know, back behind those guys, you got four teams, A&M. A&M has the biggest wild card, I think, in the West with Chavis and that hire. The offense has been proven the last 3 years. The defense has been terrible. A&M, like LSU, top 12 recruiter, has the potential to really make waves. Ole Miss, top 25 team, got them at 9-3. I just don't trust their offense. Defense, they have just about everybody back. I don't think the defense is deep enough to carry them through the entire schedule to win the West. And finally, the last two, and I know people are really high on Arkansas, but the fact is, in my opinion, is just they don't have the depth and talent level, and their quarterback play is poor. The quarterback play killed them last year. Their defense was great. They lost five guys on the defensive side of the ball. The defense allowed them to have a top 10 average starting field position on offense. I think they're going to lose that this year and finish in the bottom half. And last place, I do have Mississippi State, which is kind of weird because here you are a top 25 recruiter. But the problem is there is so much talent above them. I don't think Prescott can carry them through the entire season like he did last year with all the talent that was lost in the offseason.
Great stuff. Dave Bartu, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fascinating. I'd love to continue this conversation in the future. Thank you, Dave.
Anytime. Thank you, sir.
Geico presents Strange Savings Stories. Astronomers detected an interstellar transmission. It stated, Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. The implications were staggering. Was the cosmos telling us we could all save hundreds on car insurance with Geico? Or did their radar merely pick up a signal from the nearby Rufus and Clyde's morning show? We may never know.
Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
And now, for Geico's edition of Stuff Found in Your Car, we go inside your side door pocket.
Hello, yes, the crumpled receipt with gum in it. From your anniversary dinner, you sprang for expensive wine, your server was Beth. That dinner was a couple $100s. Money you could get back if you switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. I bet you'd save that receipt. Frame it even. But really, where did I go wrong? Was it the corkage fee?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com today.